Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to email us at ForgottenFailuresCast@gmail.com or visit ForgottenFailuresCast.com.
Congratulations, sir. You can kiss ass later. Brittle, thank you, sir.
Hi, I'm Mike.
I am also Mike.
I'm Daryl.
And I'm Lindsay, and this is Forgotten Failures. Actually, this is not Forgotten Failures.
Well,
this is Forgotten Favorites.
What?
What is that?
Plot twist.
Everybody's asking because we're listed as Forgotten Failures. We decided it would be kind of fun if we all... each and every caster chose a movie from their childhood or from a long time ago.
Before their childhood.
Before their childhood. Maybe when they were a zygote. Yeah. a movie that they heard through their mother's womb.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. Like in my case, An Officer and a Gentleman.
Yes. Wait, how do you know your mom watched that when you were
I know the
gestating?
Theme song from The Officer and a Gentleman. An Officer and a Gentleman was the number one hit when I was born.
Okay.
All right.
So, all right.
All right.
That's good enough for me.
Okay, we're getting off track already.
So we decided to all pick a movie that we remember really liking from a long time ago that maybe we don't remember everything about or that we haven't seen in a while. So that's why we're calling this Forgotten Favorites. Mm-hmm. I chose the first movie, which...
You came up with the idea, and you knew exactly what movie you wanted to do.
But then you made me change it.
What?
Yeah, it was originally going to be Baron von Munchausen's.
I think that's
But it was too popular. Yeah, it was too popular.
So we decided to go with other Monty Python.
We couldn't do a movie created by some Monty Python guy.
So we went with Eric Idle.
Yes.
Also featuring John Cleese.
In his first ever role.
Yeah, ever.
And Rick Moranis in Splitting Heirs. Like, hairs.
Not to be confused with the Pokemon episode of the same title. That apparently exists.
Splitting Heirs.
Yeah.
This is not about inheriting the estate of Professor Oak. This is about a traditional British aristocracy situation.
Ridiculous.
This is a... I will say, I'm going to put out there that I really truly went far back into my childhood watching this. Now I'm not sure why I was watching it as a child, but I only remembered like two scenes from this movie, and I didn't even like get the plot right because I thought that Rick Moranis was the child that
It seems...
like I thought that he was the kid that didn't that grew up on the wrong
switched
side of the tracks.
Out of birth.
Yeah.
That's what you would expect.
Yeah,
you know,
but
a British guy is in the position, but actually an American guy barges in and says he's the heir.
Canadian American.
Sorry.
Like in King Ralph, starring John Goodman.
So I only remembered two things from this movie. One of which was a really awesome like swimming pool bath, which was really cool, guys.
It was
really
awesome.
Good.
Yeah, I've never seen that
especially
thing like
with
that
a naked Catherine Zeta-Jones in it.
Yeah, yeah, it was almost like a lazy river type of thing.
And then
bedroom.
Also
the giant blow-up manatee.
Yeah, and then I also remembered booby tassels, which really just and Rick Moranis. I remembered those three things.
Your childhood sounded amazing.
So the only things you remember from this movie is Rick Moranis and two scenes involving naked women.
Sounds right.
That is factual. That is factually correct.
It's a great.
That means the lenses pass. Yes. We need to find out about more naked ladies. Yes.
So wonderful childhood you had.
So Mike has been doing a wonderful job at summarizing these movies
in only 90 seconds.
Yeah,
so that
90
we can
seconds.
Move on to something else afterwards.
So,
all right. So put the time on the clock, and Mike,
hang on.
Wait.
Okay. So anyway, I'll just. Talk about the backstory here, I guess.
Well, there's backstory to this?
You ready?
You want to do that?
30 seconds. What are we
90
doing?
90 seconds.
90 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds is too hard.
I don't think it takes 90 seconds to do this
plot. I don't think so either.
Let's do, I think, 45 seconds you could do this plot.
You know, let's see if you can just beat the clock. Let's see how fast you can do it.
No.
Let's just do 1 minute.
1 minute.
1 minute.
I think that's safe.
Ready?
Okay.
Go.
Okay, well, this is the story all about how the Duke of Bournemouth dies, and he leaves his estate to Rick Moranis, who is his son, who's been living in America because his mom wanted him to live in America. However, Eric Idle finds out that he's not really an Anglo-Indian. He's actually a white guy, and he is actually the heir to the estate because they got mixed up as babies in baskets. And at that point, he goes to consult a lawyer. That's played by John Cleese. John Cleese tells him that he should murder Rick Moranis, and that's the only way to become the Duke.
30 seconds remaining.
Because as far as Rick Moranis is in the Duke, his story is plausible. But if Rick Moranis was dead, Eric Idle's story about how he was actually the Duke would then be plausible. So then he just spends the whole movie trying to murder Rick Moranis. Except in the last 20 minutes, it then turns out that he's been reformed and become a good guy. And it's actually been John Cleese trying to murder Rick Moranis because John Cleese is crazy.
Woo.
And he thought that's what Eric Idle wanted him to do. And then at the end, John Cleese tries to kill everybody with a shotgun.
Two.
But then...
One.
He gets assassinated himself. See? Now, 60 seconds is too short, even for a movie with an incredibly short plot.
Yes. So, there's a lot of explaining that has to go
honestly, on. I think you did a pretty good job.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even mention any of the female characters.
That doesn't matter.
They don't really matter. Yeah. Well, actually,
yeah, they do.
Barbara Hershey matters.
Do women ever
and
matter?
And Catherine Zeta-Jones, she totally matters. Okay. Matters. Yeah.
That's right. This is apparent. This is the second major role for Catherine Zeta-Jones, age 24 at this time.
Do you think that anybody has ever gotten a fish and named it Catherine Beta-Jones? Like
yes.
A beta fish?
Yes, I think that's happened all the time.
Okay.
I hope so.
I really hope so.
I hope Michael Douglas has a fish named Catherine Beta-Jones.
That maybe that's what he calls her vagina.
What?
Fish? Hey, Catherine Zeta, why don't you bring your Catherine Beta into the bedroom?
Those fish have very long tails.
But
well, don't worry, Michael Douglas is quite the tongue man, so he knows how to please a tail.
Oh, you're beating me again. Oh, but, 60 seconds up already?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh.
But long story short, Catherine Zeta-Jones is very hot in this movie. She's hot to trot because she's young. There's another woman, Barbara Hershey, who is also incredibly milfy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Barbara Hershey.
Very milfy.
Yeah, Barbara Hershey plays the Duchess.
Yeah, the wife of the deceased Duke and mother of Rick Moranis, who shows up.
Lucinda. Duchess Lucinda, name not really mattering.
Yeah, she wears an assortment of amazing hats. She has a big blonde wig on.
She's known as a whore. Everybody just.
Yeah, I think in the 60s she was like a fashion photographer who seduced the Duke.
A model or something
and
like
free
that.
Spirit.
And like now
free spirit,
that
exactly.
It's the 90s, she is actually Lady Gaga's spirit animal.
She is. She is the most fashionable person in this movie.
Well, yeah. She's the only woman other than Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, she's like the
and
missing
all she
link
knows
between
is wear, like tight outfits.
Yeah, she's like the missing link between Madonna and Lady Gaga.
Yeah, she's got the best hats in the world. Like one hat, it almost looked like she had killed Big Bird. It was like
and
a wedding hat.
And pink?
No. And dyed
not even the pink one.
No, the one with the at the wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
With
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was like yellow and had like little black feathers.
And the one that looks like a giant red daylily.
Yeah, and then she wore a couple where she looked like she was wearing like petals, like leaf.
Yeah.
Tinkerbell one.
Yeah,
that was when she was wearing the green dress.
Yeah, she was just always going to the Kentucky Derby. Yeah. Is what
even
was
her
going
exercise
on.
Wear was amazing.
Yeah,
she was jogging in a diaphanous
and like a caftan.
Well, she was in mourning at that time.
Yeah, she wasn't.
She was wearing her
like
skin tight
neck stockings.
She was wearing her
running shoes.
Her skin tight morning jogging suit.
The classic.
With all the cleavage in the world.
So the thing about Barbara Hershey in this movie is that she plays Eric Idle's and Rick Moranis' mother.
Yeah.
So you can tell that she is kind of insulted by this.
Because
Barbara Hershey, born 1948. Eric Idle, born 1943. Rick Moranis, born 1953.
And in the movie, wants us to believe that there's a baby that was born in the late 60s, and now it's the late 80s, early 90s,
and it grew up to be Eric Idle.
And Eric Idle is that baby, which mathematically does not check out.
Yeah. No.
It's like when Eric Idle, he's the writer and producer and, the main actor. So I guess
he wrote both of the songs, including the French song.
Yeah.
So I guess, when you have that much power in a movie, you decide what happens, whether it makes sense or not.
Like, I know most scripts flatter, the actor.
Yeah.
But this is beyond, is a 20-plus year gap in age.
Yeah. The only explanation is if he's got that Jack disease. Yeah. Where he just ages
prematurely aged.
It's like a Benjamin
years for every
Button
year.
Type thing.
Yeah, so the reverse Benjamin Button.
So this boy who was born during the Summer of Love, when Monty Python was like a year away from being
more
on
than
TV,
before,
became Eric Idle.
The invasion of D-Day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, literally. Yeah, but Rick Moranis is the rightful heir, right?
Nope.
We are led to believe this.
So confused.
He has a very regal bearing.
Yeah, you can tell because he always goes everywhere and Rollerblades.
And,
everywhere.
And he's really safe about it because he's always got the knee pads and the elbow pads.
And the hand, and nice, wrist guards.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't want to get hurt.
He plays an interesting character because he's like a bumbling Mr. Magoo, but he's like, he's a cool Magoo.
Yeah, he's the confident, like, rich guy.
He's always barely,
he's like the big fat party animal.
He's
and
like the
Eric
man,
Idle is like the shy nerd.
No,
guy.
But he's also, he has that like man that knew too little likeness about him.
He is kind of oblivious.
Like ignorance is bliss type of thing.
Yeah, because
but
he's
granted,
constantly.
I mean, this is a movie about a woman in the 60s who lost her baby and just said, oh, that looks like it. Yeah. I'll take it.
But yeah, he's constantly like in danger but not knowing it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, Eric Idle also, not only is he playing like 20 years under his age, but he is also playing Asian. In this movie.
Yeah, it is a bit of an inspired idea. It's kind of much like The Jerk.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
like The
very
Jerk.
Very much like The Jerk.
Eric Idle has grown up in an Indian family. His name is
a very large Indian family.
Yeah.
His last name is actually Patel.
His name, his name is Ranjit Patel.
Ranjit Patel.
People call him Tommy for some reason, which was his birth name. I guess that's a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't know.
He works somehow for
somehow they just knew. Like, he looks like a Tommy.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
He has a small role. He's worked his way up to a role as in a stockbroker's office after working at the corner shop, as all Indians do. So he's from a working class Indian background.
Yep.
He never thinks of himself as anything other than Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his mom at some point actually has to explain that he was adopted and that he's not actually Asian.
Yeah.
And he has a hard time like believing this, so much so that he goes to like the adoption agency.
Yeah.
And has to go comb through his records to see like, oh man, I wondered why I didn't look anything like the 7 other brothers and sisters I have.
Which is when he decides, he finds out then who facilitated the adoption, and finds out that it's John Cleese's character, who is a basement lawyer.
Mm-hmm. He's a lawyer named Raoul Shadgrind.
Shadgrind.
And he is a crazy lawyer, apparently.
Yeah, he immediately advises Eric Idle to kill the current Duke in order to make a claim to being the actual
I think
Duke.
It made sense, because he says, well, you don't have any real evidence that you're the Duke, even though I think you are. And there is already a Duke. But if the current Duke was dead, then your evidence would be very plausible, because the House of Lords doesn't want the dukedom to disappear. They want there to be some sort of Duke there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you could be the Duke if the current Duke was dead. Know what I mean?
So, yeah, Eric Idle kind of takes him up on it, though.
Yeah.
Like, he acts like he doesn't want to.
But, you know, then he quickly goes into murder mode.
Yeah, there's a murder mode. Like a weird, almost like, not quite montage, because there's too much time in between each instance.
Uh-huh. In fact, you'll notice that's a common theme throughout this movie.
There's
just a lot of time in between.
There's a lot
of stuff.
Even though the movie is 84 minutes long.
Yeah. It's not trim at all.
They
wasted a lot of time in 84 minutes somehow.
Yeah. The only clue we have that time has passed is in the old scenes. It's black and white.
Yeah. In the scenes from like 1970, it's black and white.
Yeah.
As if it's during the war or something.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know who to root for in this movie.
Uh-huh.
Because there isn't. You don't want to root for it either. Because Eric Idle, even though he's like the disenfranchised, poor dude, he's made at least 7-8 attempts to murder Rick Moranis throughout this movie.
The thing is that Rick Moranis is not really a jerk. I mean, he's kind of oafish.
Kind of crass. I mean, I think they're playing up
really crass.
He's an American. He's just crazy. He just doesn't have any manners. Shaking folks' hands.
It's not like he comes in and says, "Okay, we're going to have to tear down this castle. We're going to have to modernize everything."
He embraces it pretty well.
He really likes being the Duke.
Yeah.
He appreciates British history.
Yeah, pretty much exactly what you would imagine from someone who just inherited a shitload of money and decides, I've been kind of bumbling all my life. I guess I'll do it with money. Yeah.
And the ways in which that Eric Idle tries to kill Rick Moranis, like the ideas that he comes up with go from like plausible to absolutely insane, because it starts off with him putting poison in a flask to give to Rick Moranis.
On the suggestion of John Cleese.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're talking to a lawyer. I mean, he's going to give you some advice, you know.
I think this is John Cleese's best part of the movie, where he, like, kind of gradually goes from just talking theoretically to obviously telling him how he should kill the guy. He's like, if he should take a solution of mercuric chloride in brandy, which is undetectable.
Completely undetectable.
So he comes up with an idea where he there's like a fox hunt.
Yeah.
And so he gives.
Which, by the way, I just want to mention this fox hunt scene. There's a priest who is like
like he blesses praying. The fox hunt.
Yeah, he
it's like they're at the christening of a ship or something.
Yeah, he's like praying. He's like, yes, and oh Lord, bless this blessed fox hunt. Kill all the foxes. Send them to your fiery hell.
Yeah, and there's also some anti-fox hunt protesters, which I think they must have cut out a scene where they actually do something because we just saw them walking around.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Yeah.
So at this fox hunt is the first murder attempt where. Eric Idle's character gives Rick Moranis this flask of poison. Mm-hmm. Rick Moranis gladly accepts.
It's a beautiful flask. It's half wood, half metal.
Accidentally drops the flask, which the priest then drinks.
Yeah.
Which is like a believable way to try to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it ends up at one point where at a bachelor party, a bachelor party, Eric Idle has somehow arranged for a hot air balloon to be set up on a beach and no one else is around. And then he takes Rick Moranis' passed out body, puts it into the hot air balloon, and just assumes
just float away.
That you know it's going to run out of juice somewhere on the ocean. He's just going to die.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he just poison Rick Moranis after he's already passed out?
I don't know.
The poison, I guess someone took the flask.
Yeah.
The flask is gone.
You can give people only so many flasks.
Before it looks a little weird.
You just dump it down his throat and then put the empty flask next to him.
But he just comes up with crazier plots to try to kill this dude.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, this is like after a bachelor party. I mean, he's dragging a passed out Rick Moranis through the dark of night and just gets into a hot air balloon because I guess there's a hot air balloon rental open up at like 11 o'clock at night. I'm sure you don't have to put a deposit or a name
with no attendance or anything. They just trust that you know how to operate
a hot air balloon. Where's the guy that's like moves that thing? I think even if you rent one now, there has to be a guy
person.
With you.
Like, he's there's an operator.
Yeah. He's the local gentry. He makes the laws locally. He can just arrange for there to be a hot air balloon wherever he wants. He'll pay for it on credit later.
All right.
So it gets pretty crazy.
These are murder plots. They get more stupid and more cliched, I think.
Well, then after that, like, after the hot air balloon plot, it goes from...
eventually, he tries to burn down the building.
Well, first, he tries to hit Rick Moranis over the head with a candlestick. He tries to stab him.
Yeah.
Then he sets up the most ridiculous... a robotic pool cleaner.
It's a pool vacuum.
It's like...
With multiple tentacles that... Yes.
Remote-controlled.
Eric Idle has rigged up a bunch of servo motors, remote-controlled, to create a robotic, deadly killing machine out of a pool vacuum.
It's like
a
pool vacuum. To the pool.
Yeah, that's almost like an octopus, but I think it only had four tentacles, a quadrupus.
That was
but
creative. That was not cliche.
All independently of
each
other.
Yeah.
All Eric... being controlled by an RC remote, so I have no idea how that works.
Yeah. He just went down to Radio Shack, you know.
Yeah,
that thing is a masterpiece of robotics.
And Rick Moranis survives all these things, not even realizing that someone's trying to murder him because he's just such a bumbling idiot. Mm-hmm. Like,
he's just clueless.
He's not an idiot. He's just oblivious.
You think it's just because maybe he had so much money he didn't have to worry about anything?
Yeah, he's just not. He's just not aware. I guess is the thing. He's not aware at all of like his surroundings.
He's trying to get. He's just an American.
Yeah.
He's just a dumbass American.
Therefore, he should be murdered and replaced by a British guy.
Yes.
So we did mention that at some point there was a bachelor party, and that's because Rick Moranis is getting married to Catherine Zeta-Jones, hot-bodied Catherine Zeta-Jones. So what happens before they get married, though,
is the hot air balloon incident.
No.
Lands on top of a car in a funeral procession, and the widow thinks he's a ghost.
Yes, but before...
And then promptly dies.
Yep. But before that, what's his face? Now I'm losing track.
John Cleese,
Eric
Moranis,
no,
the Butler.
Lost it. It's okay.
The Butler.
You're going to talk about the banging scene?
Probably. Oh. I was going to talk about the whole reason why they were trying to do that.
But by the way, doesn't really matter what this movie's rated because whatever it's rated, it's not rated enough to see Eric Idle's sack, which you see twice. You see his fucking balls twice.
Ball sack.
Ball sack.
So what happens before any sort of marriage announcement is made is Eric Idle and Catherine Zeta-Jones do it because Catherine Zeta-Jones totally seduces him.
Yes, they go to a play, I think.
Yeah. And we think like this is because like they were lovers in the past or something. But no,
they don't.
Catherine Zeta-Jones just finds Eric Idle irresistible.
In fact, up to this point, you actually have no idea who Catherine Zeta-Jones is. No. She's an interloper at...
Funeral?
Rick Moranis' funeral.
Yeah, she's just hanging out with Rick Moranis.
No, not Rick Moranis' funeral.
Yes.
Well, she
Rick
shows
his father's funeral.
Well, Rick Moranis shows up to take over the family business. And Catherine Zeta-Jones is just with him. We thought she was his assistant, who was then trying to seduce him in a gold-digging scheme. But it turns out that she's just his fiance, and she's been that way the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's American, it seems.
Yeah.
So I think she probably came over
British.
With him.
No, she's a British. She's a British.
Was she?
She
didn't have an accent.
That's news to me.
Yeah, me too.
It's like a British beer. They do something with beer.
Yeah, she's
it's
also
not
an heiress.
Explained and it doesn't even matter.
She's not really a gold digger either. She's apparently a beer heiress.
Yeah, because, I mean, you see her house, and her house is immaculate. I mean, she's got like a really nice bowl.
And she's a pinup of some sort. It's in the newspaper.
Yes. It's like a big deal. People know
they just called her that because she was beautiful. Yeah, so yeah, her apartment has a lot of levels in it. It's like the apartment Cosmo Kramer wanted to have.
Yeah, it's like it's like Q-Bert.
Like she stands on the bed and like she still can't reach the ceiling. The ceiling is like 18 feet high, and the bed is on one of the highest levels in the room.
Yes, it's all just like a tiered platform. It's just like a trophy room.
And behind the bed
is like first place.
Yeah, and behind the bed, a swimming pool.
Yes,
yes,
with a floating animal in it.
Yeah, it's like some weird early 90s. Feng Shui masterpiece.
Yeah, it's all white.
I really hope this is where she still lives when she's keeping her residence.
You know what I don't understand,
Mr. Douglas,
is why that old lady lives there, because that seems like a very hip like building. There's an old lady that shames
Eric
Idle.
You don't really
think
about that.
Yeah, every time he comes in and out of Catherine Zeta-Jones' door.
Well, she did have to go upstairs. Maybe those are the crappier apartments.
Yeah, those are the shit flats.
Yeah.
No, wait. The penthouse is usually the nicest apartment.
Yeah, this
so Catherine Zeta-Jones lives in a relatively cheap building, but she invests all her money in fancy decorations.
Yeah.
And she wants to seduce Eric Idle right before her wedding to McMoranis, because that is just something that comes
people do.
That is logical to her.
She wants like a last fling or something. I forget what she called it.
She
literally
said
just
it.
Like, I just kind of want to have sex with you.
She said it like it was a thing that people did.
Like,
especially if you have access to Eric Idle. So she says she calls him beautiful. She says he was great in bed. Barbara Hershey also calls Eric Idle beautiful, and she's trying to seduce him as well. Remember, a script written by Eric Idle.
This is a whole vehicle for Eric Idle to get made out with by Catherine Zeta-Jones.
It is.
And a vehicle for
just
Eric
just to make
Idle
himself
like,
look
I'm pretty
he's
sure...
older than the actress who plays his mother.
I'm pretty sure there is a black leather couch involved in the audition process for both of these ladies, for Eric Idle. I'm pretty sure Eric Idle did the casting call, and there was a black leather couch.
I think Barbara Hershey was a more successful actor than Eric Idle was at this point.
Probably.
I think so, and I mean, not to put too fine a point on this, the cast got to see the same sack. The audience got to see.
Oh yeah, back to the sack.
Times.
Yeah. So Catherine Zeta-Jones and Eric Idle have this night of love making. They do it at least five times.
Night of love making.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up in the morning to find her swimming in this bath pool. Awesome thing that's behind the bed.
Yeah, that was a cool sequence. Yeah.
And they're laying there. Eric Idle's in love and finds out, oh, you're engaged to my friend Henry.
The one I've been trying to kill.
Yeah, Rick Moranis. Yeah. So she stuffs him in a closet because Rick Moranis is actually heading up right now.
That is the first time you see a sack. I'm sorry. I'll stop talking about it.
Daryl's just very obsessed with this ball sack.
Well, I was obsessed with it because you never see balls in a movie. Who sees balls in a movie? Yeah. This is a movie made in 1993. It's a comedy starring Rick Moranis, and you see Eric Idle's
this
balls.
Is true.
Twice.
This is true. It's PG-13,
twice.
By the way.
PG-13?
Wasn't the...
He says shit like four times.
And they went to that peep show, and I'm pretty sure that chick's nipples were hanging out.
There were booby tassels and butt tassels.
Yeah.
By the way, if you guys didn't know butt tassels were a thing...
They're a thing.
Totally a thing.
Yeah.
Totally awesome.
Yeah, they are at stag parties.
By the way, butt tassels, that is like the precursor to twerking.
Yeah.
At least it should be.
Actually, it's for white women because there's no, you know, they don't really have, for twerkers, you don't really need the tassels to get your eye there.
But if they had the tassels.
Oh, that'd be even better.
Just saying. Butt tassels and twerking, I think that's a match made in heaven.
Just add those on.
But, I digress.
Create some sort of weird vibration due to depending on the resonant frequencies of the tassels.
I think that's actually how you break glass.
Break ass.
Okay, so before Eric Idle reforms himself, his last plot to kill Rick Moranis is to burn down his house, right?
Catherine Zeta in it as well.
He just gives up. He's just like, F
he's
it.
Like, screw
I'm
it.
He's
just burned
his father.
Yeah. He was just trying to kill Rick Moranis
Mick
before.
Mick Riley?
And, he was just trying to kill Rick Moranis before, and then he just decides, fuck it.
Yep.
Let's kill everybody.
I'm just going to kill everybody because...
It's like where the guy goes crazy, and he goes like, hee-hee-hee-hee-hee, I don't even care anymore.
Yeah.
And this is right before this, because this happens during Catherine Zeta-Jones and Rick Moranis' honeymoon, which is in France somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. And but right before all this, we understand that it's France because there's a song that Eric Idle wrote and sang that's called Le Maire and is just I defy anybody to try to make sense of these words. They were in French.
I think it's a parody supposedly. Of Serge Gainsbourg.
Yes.
They were just French sounds.
It's just like somebody doing the cadences of how French people do accents.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like, bleh, si, bleh.
And not to digress too much, but that is not the only song written and sung by Eric Idle in this movie.
That is not the only terrible song, because they're all terrible.
Both of them are terrible.
Eric Idle should not be making songs.
He only did two songs. That was not him singing.
I'm pretty sure he did
that
everything.
That was not him singing I Put a Spell on You.
No, he did, and it was terrible.
No.
What was the other one? It was
That awful was the theme song.
Taking
in the
my baby away.
Oh, that's right.
Someone came and stole my baby away. Someone came and stole my whole life away. I was so happy all of the time. With my baby, I was also fine.
Terrible.
It was bad.
Yeah. Eric Idle, you know, he could be a good singer, songwriter. He wrote most of the songs in the Life of Brian movie, like Always Look on the Bright Side of
and
Life.
Spam
you
know? A lot.
Yeah, a lot of people can write songs, but a lot of people don't end up singing.
He was
those
in the
songs.
Phony Beatles band, The Ruddles, back in the early 70s. But these songs are not
but
his
he
best
was just
work.
A baby then.
Right. No, anyway, I'll take this back. They weren't badly written. They were just badly put together.
They were annoying.
They were badly performed.
This was an annoying song.
Yeah. Yes.
It's never good when you start a movie and the theme song is just like, it's cringeworthy.
Yes.
Yeah. God awful. You just really want the movie to start so we can stop.
It sounded like one of those like yummy, 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 I've got love in my teeth.
Yeah, it was very
songs.
Like bubblegum pop type of crap.
Yes.
You know what's kind of disappointing in this movie? There weren't even like that many good extras. There weren't.
That's right. Well, all there was those French guys in the berets.
Yes.
And the German dude.
And by the way, it should be all the French people, because I mean, they cannot put too fine a point on what French people do and what their mannerisms are.
Yeah, what they do, wear berets.
They wear berets. And they smoke cigarettes.
The
only thing they were missing was like drawn on mustaches.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all wearing like striped shirts or berets.
And I think when they asked the extras, they was like, "Well, come on, let me just put the mustache on."
No, absolutely.
Other good extras were the guys who were standing around the piano when Rick Moranis was singing a catchy song.
I was
at the
a
piano
fan of the Scrunchy
in a
Man.
Pub.
There's a man who had a really like thick and flowing like ponytail.
Oh yeah.
With a scrunchie in, and he was just the best.
He had a cool t-shirt, too.
He actually was the coolest guy at that bar, because, I mean, this is 93, so, I mean, you know, big 80s hair is still kind of a thing, and the bartender has big 80s hair. His ponytail is way bigger than hers.
Yeah.
It just looks like a shaggy
dog. And even
dog
the top, he got like a pompadour almost going on, like up front. Yeah. I don't even know how he did it, but he had great hair.
Yeah. Shout out to that guy.
There's the look of the characters and the settings and everything. This is kind of like a really, really poor man's Fish Called Wanda, I think.
Yeah. I did like the like all the interior shots of the castle.
Okay.
It was really awesome.
The stately home.
Yeah. I wonder if it really was shot in.
I think they probably
ran those out for movie shoots.
Yeah,
I'm sure they rent it out.
That's how they make their money now.
Yeah.
Those British people.
They let Rick Moranis take tours and roller skates.
They're not raping and pillaging anymore, so
they can't just rent it
out their castles.
Yeah. Nice. They just live in like a set of rooms in one wing.
How far they have fallen.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the movie, there's this happy ending, and part of it is that Rick Moranis has used his American business acumen to make the place a popular tourist attraction.
Yeah.
Successful end for one of these homes is to be a tourist attraction.
And we do find out a little bit, you know, it's kind of sweet that even though Catherine Zeta-Jones likes to sleep around a little bit, she actually does really love Rick Moranis.
She really does, which is a nice little ending.
Because there was a point where Catherine Zeta-Jones, for really no reason, told Eric Idle that the baby that she had was his.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I was lying about that. And she thinks that Rick Moranis is dead, and she's really sad. And Eric Idle's like, well, you have to marry me. It's our baby. And I'll take care of you. And she's like, but I don't want to marry you. I don't love you. Which was like sad for Eric Idle.
Yeah.
But it was really sweet
out.
For her.
He's like, I love Michael Douglas.
Yeah, like she told Eric Idle that the baby was his. And then I did not see the twist coming where it actually wasn't his.
Yeah.
I think that's because it was a stupid twist.
It was a really dumb for no reason.
There was no real
plot. She didn't really have a reason.
Yeah, what was the reason for her to even tell him that it was his in the first place?
She also mentions that he raped her after she
had
to seduce him for whatever reason. Everyone is on Eric Idle's penis.
Yes.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
For whatever reason. I wonder why.
Yeah.
But,
well, it's because he's a very attractive, like, 29-year-old man.
Yeah, he's just a hot dude.
he's just a hottie.
Yeah.
One of the big things in this movie is Barbara Hershey is also trying to seduce Eric Idle, because who isn't trying to get on that?
But, to be fair, she tries to seduce everybody.
Yeah.
That is fair. She is clearly a whore.
I'm sorry. There's a scene that I don't even fucking So there's a scene, and this is one of, like, the Eric Idle trying to kill Rick Moranis scenes, where they're skeet shooting, and he devises this bomb, like, clay pigeon bomb. They set it off. Rick Moranis can't shoot for shit. He ends up batting it towards a boathouse. The boathouse explodes, and then Barbara Hershey, his mom, comes out, and she's, like, doing this guy in a boat.
She just happens to be floating by behind the boathouse. It had nothing to do with the rest of the scene.
No, she was in the boathouse.
They were banging in the boathouse.
That's why she came out, because
the boathouse
it exploded.
Got blown up, and then they floated outwards.
And no one says, oh my fucking God, the boathouse exploded. What the shit? All they say is, like, oh, hey, mom. That's all. Rick Moranis is like, hey, mom.
Hey, mom, and then, who's that guy you're with?
Then Barbara Hershey's just, like, trying to cover and be like, oh, I was showing this guy the view. Like, very badly covering that she was having sex with this guy right now.
Well, this scene is
They don't mention, no one is concerned that the boathouse just exploded for no goddamn reason.
That something blew it up.
That's right.
That was shot at him.
No one mentions it.
Because Eric Idle just straight up shoots his bomb skeet right at Rick Moranis.
Yes.
And Rick Moranis, being the American, says, hey, I play baseball, and bats it.
I'll hit it with my rifle.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is good, because they show one scene of the rifle being shot, and it doesn't fire. There's nothing that comes out of it. There's no smoke. There's nothing.
See, this whole...
It's literally just a recorded sound of what a gun should sound like when it's fired, and then they just show the gun.
And then the skeet blows up.
Yes.
The skeet shooting scene, I mean, this movie is so padded, even for an 84-minute movie. The skeet shooting scene should have been like 2 seconds in a montage of murder attempts.
Yes, yes. Those murder attempts
should
have
been. You don't have to see one person successfully shoot a skeet, and then Rick Moranis unsuccessfully shoot a skeet, and then Eric Idle load the bomb skeet into the skeet machine and point it at Rick Moranis
skeet,
for
bomb
some
skeet,
reason.
Bomb skeet, bomb skeet.
And sorry.
No, that was appropriate.
Till the sweat drips from Eric Idle's balls.
In full view of the audience.
All these bitches crawl.
Away from the burning boats.
Yeah, but there's just like a lot of like, just obliviousness. And that's why I think it's just the awareness thing. That he comes across as an idiot because he's not aware that like really weird things are happening around him.
Yes.
That are all
really
sort
he's just lucky.
Because, I mean, the scenes where Rick Moranis is almost killed with a candlestick and a knife, I mean, they're literally just like, Eric Idle is just trying to hit him with a candlestick and just turns around and hey, you need help with that candlestick?
Yeah.
It looks heavy.
Yeah, it's like,
oh, you know what, don't, you know, he tries to stab him with a knife and it ends up hitting a roast chicken because, again, it's kind of weird. Eric Idle is on the honeymoon with Rick Moranis and Catherine Zeta-Jones. They they just bring him with them.
And he's it's not like they had a whole entourage of people. Because some people do that.
It was just him, right?
It's just him.
Rick Moranis seems like this really cool, friendly guy.
Yeah.
But Eric Idle, who he just met at the beginning of the movie, is his only friend.
His only and best friend. Even though in the very beginning, he went to the dickhead pub and instantly had everybody like in song, you know, around a piano.
It's another one of the half-assed like Americanisms. It's like the American doesn't know the name of the pub. He thinks it's called the dickhead. It's actually the Richard III pub.
Tomatoes, tomatoes.
Yeah, but then he's in there singing with all these British guys and having a great time.
Yeah, and they go back to a pub at some point, and everybody's like, you know, they're all carousing and doing whatever.
Rick Moranis is the cock of the walk.
Yes, he's the cock of the walk. He
the life of the party.
Yeah, he can get people caught up, turned up, you know, doing whatever. Yeah.
Like, why is Eric Idle his only friend?
Because Eric Idle is kind of a bummer of a friend. He doesn't really bring much to the table.
I mean, he seems like it's weird because, I mean, he seems kind of nice to him, but at the same time, he's a little standoffish because he wants to murder him.
So, a list of things that aren't explained in this movie is...
Everything
is why a friendship, such a close friendship exists between Eric Idle and Rick Moranis.
Yes.
Why Rick Moranis and Catherine Zeta-Jones are together, even. Why the mother, Barbara Hershey, can't recognize her son, Eric Idle, when he looks exactly like his father.
Yeah, well, the thing is,
and
like
exactly like every other portrait in the home.
Well, that's because Eric Idle did play the father.
One of the best parts of the movie is when they go on the tour of the stately home.
And
there's all these paintings of like the man in the 17th century, the World War II guy, the old grandmother, and they're all just the face of Eric Idle in all these paintings.
Like, I think that is probably the coolest thing that Eric Idle got to do, just having a bunch of pictures of him.
I wonder if we got to keep those. I hope
that's
so.
Right.
I mean, a lot of them are him as women, too. I mean, it's the exact same face.
You thought it was cool for Larry Miller to have that embossed book with his face on the cover. Eric Idle has all these paintings of himself as these fictional characters from past centuries.
My favorite is the 18th century safari hunter who got his leg lost.
Yeah.
Somehow.
It was on safari.
Yeah, I will say that in rewatching this movie, like as a full-fledged adult, it doesn't hold up.
Really?
No?
No, it doesn't. I really love this. Like, I had like such fun. I had a fondness in my heart.
How many times
do
you think you watched it?
I don't know. A couple. Yeah. A couple sometimes.
There's a lot of things in this movie that are just very, very strange to me. Like, so the fact that Catherine Zeta-Jones gets pregnant. It immediately cuts to baby that's, like, you know, 6 months old.
Yeah, she never actually spends time being pregnant. She just says she's pregnant, and then the baby's there.
They didn't have the budget for that.
They didn't have the budget for a thing on the screen that says 9 months later.
No. Yeah.
Or, like, it should be, like, almost a year and a half later. That baby's huge.
Oh, and one funny thing is there's a scene when they just first show the baby and everything where the nanny is walking off in the pram not realizing that Eric Idle is taking the baby out to hold it and then explodes, and then they immediately cut to a funeral scene where they're burying the nanny, and you can tell it's the nanny because they put the nanny's hat that was in the explosion, so it's all like burnt up and stuff on top of the casket.
That's just
the
classy way to do a funeral.
We don't want to do an open casket, but just kind of like look
so
at this burn marks and just
she got blown up
back to her face.
There probably wasn't much left of her. She got blown up.
Is that like an English tradition to like put something that you died in on the casket?
If it's a hilarious hat, then yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to be buried with a hat.
Yeah.
On casket.
So this murder attempt was one of the ones by John Cleese, because he has started hanging around saying, you know what, Eric Idle, I'm going to help you out here. And Eric Idle tells him to go away. Yeah, so John Cleese decided to blow up the baby carriage so he could kill the baby. Because even if Rick Moranis is dead, now there's this baby who would then be the next Duke if Rick Moranis died, so the baby has to also be killed. This is John Cleese's warped view of the world, because he is a wacky, crazy guy.
And the thing is, it doesn't really, because he starts off as just a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Just a
lawyer.
Just a lawyer in a basement office with a window, and apparently a solid view. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. A lot of light down there in the basement.
Yeah.
He's been
a lawyer for like 30 years, so he's not like a total incompetent. No. But then he goes crazy.
And towards the end of the movie, he actually just decides to kill Eric Idle, too. And he had somehow already become the guardian of the baby, even though the baby had two parents.
Yeah.
Like, he had somehow...
Possibly three parents.
Did they cut something else out of the film, or they established that he had some sort of relationship with his family, besides just signing the paperwork for the adoption?
Yeah. Or maybe you can just become a guardian of any child that you want to? You just file the paperwork?
If the parents forget to file the paperwork, any other person can just jump in. It's like a common law marriage.
Yeah. It's like the olden days, you just, like, plant the flag. It's like, this is mine now.
Yep. Put down a stake.
Yeah.
It's yours.
We're on the moon, it's America's.
So Harriet mentioned the extensive seduction scene with Barbara Hershey in the house that's about to burn down.
Yes. So one of the other things in this movie is like Barbara Hershey, she really, really wants to have sex with her son. Really, really
that's
wants
right,
to have sex.
Because Eric Idle reminds her of her husband. So she's drawn to him somehow.
Yes, and, you know, very sexually drawn to him. So she decides, she's been trying to seduce him for a few scenes at this point, but she finally gets him back into the house, and the butler, whose name is Butler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're pretty sure his name is Butler. They all probably also cut out a scene where they made it clear that the butler's name is actually Butler, and that's a joke, but it's not really clear in the movie.
Like,
but
I don't think
they cut anything out of this movie.
Because
it was already drawn out enough.
Long.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems kind of weird, because at first you're like, oh, Butler. They're just saying, like, oh,
yeah,
Butler.
They just call him Butler.
Then they just kind of like use that as a name when they're obviously very familiar. It doesn't matter.
There must have been a scene where it's like, what is your name anyway, Butler? My name is Butler, sir. But they don't have that scene.
Drunk again, sir. That's okay, Butler. So are we.
Yeah. Well, and this is a kind of a confusing scene. The butler seems strangely attracted to Barbara Hershey, too. Like, he seems to just kind of stare at her a lot, at her chest.
Like,
lot,
angrily
like,
stare.
Like, hate. He, like, wants to hate fuck her.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, she's been living in the house as the Duchess for the last 20-some years, right?
Yeah, which means he's
I guess the butler's been working there the whole time.
Yeah, he might have been banging her. Who knows?
Mm? Nah. He's just pent up.
He's just a help.
Yeah.
So he interrupts the seduction scene.
He interrupts the seduction scene by bringing in what might be a
I think those were Jordan almonds.
No, they're pills.
I think they look, they look like some sort of pills.
Yeah,
yeah, so it's either Jordan almonds or pills.
They look like big Tic Tacs.
Yeah.
And but there were a couple that looked kind of just like round Quaaludes.
They could have been that too.
So like he brings this tray in for her, and Eric Idle is just sitting next to a fire thinking about how he just killed his two best friends, or at least he thinks they're dead.
He's sitting next to a drapery that says, "Thou shalt not kill" on it.
Yeah. You know, not to put too fine a point on it or anything, but... Barbara Hershey is still in her seduction mode, and but she's got to take her pills because, I mean, she has a child as old as Eric Idle, which means she must be, like, 97. Yeah. So she's taking a bunch of pills, trying to seductively, like, eat them in front of him. And it is, you know, this movie, there's some hilarious scenes in it, but this is actually a very funny scene of her just trying to, like, put pills in her mouth seductively.
She, like, puts them between her fingers.
And... There's one part where she puts, she has her, like, hand flat up next to her face.
Mm-hmm.
And then puts the pills on the top of the back of her hand.
Yeah,
like lines them up. Lines them up.
And does she like lick them up?
She like gobbles them up.
Yeah, she made like a gargle sound.
She licks her hand after the pills are gone, which is why I thought they were almonds or something. They're leaving some sort of salty residue.
And she finishes this up. It's actually pretty hilarious. She finishes up this like non-sexy like pill taking scene. By drinking water, the water just like falls all over her face.
Yeah. This is like dribbling out of her mouth.
This is the point where it began to really resemble like the scene where Priscilla Presley seduces Lieutenant Frank Drebin in one of the Naked Gun movies.
Yeah, it was very Naked Gun, like airplane style humor out of nowhere.
Which is what I didn't like about that scene. Like, it was funny, but it just, it was so completely out of the rest.
This is where
the
realism of the movie breaks down.
I mean, on, it's one thing.
This is the scene.
It's one thing if you're going to make that movie. That's fine.
Yeah,
but if you just throw
throughout.
That in there out of nowhere, it just I lost it.
This is when he has his moral.
This is when he has his moral.
Draw the line. So this is after he's set up the house to burn, but before it started burning. So then he starts panicking. He has his moral reawakening. And he says something somewhat funny, which is
I was doomed to hell as a Christian and horrendous rebirth as a Hindu.
After that, he decides to reform. He tries to prevent John Cleese from killing Rick Moranis, eventually successfully, I guess.
There was a really good line when Barbara Hershey first met Eric Idle, and she says, "You remind me of my late husband. He was hung like a badger."
Yeah,
hung like a badger.
And all of us in the room were like, "Is that good or bad?" But then Eric Idle also said, "Is that good?"
And she explains, "It's good if you're a badger."
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any... Why would you even say he's hung like a badger? It doesn't mean anything.
It's a joke. This is a comedy, Lindsay.
I mean, it's...
Lines that don't make sense in a comedy are jokes.
Is that how it works?
Well, I mean, it's an inside joke if you're a taxidermist or a badger penis enthusiast.
Yeah.
And that's the scene where Catherine Zeta-Jones meets Eric Idle and says, "I love the flowers you're wearing around your neck. Are you an old hippie?" And he says, "No, I'm Asian."
Yeah. There are good one-liners in this movie.
Yeah, but they just got more and more, you know. I liked the kind of the beginning where Eric Idle was working in this office with this, like, sassy secretary.
Yeah.
And he was like hanging out with his Indian
boss.
He was hanging out with the Indian family. I liked that stuff. And then the stuff where he was trying to kill Rick Moranis was just so full of cliches.
It's
sad that, like, some of the best parts of the movie fall away within, like, the first 20 minutes. Like...
The Indian family is a great idea.
Yeah, and they're gone. I mean,
they don't matter.
They come back in one very hilarious scene that is like a dream sequence of Eric Idle murdering Rick Moranis with dressed as like a Hindu warrior with a huge recurved bow that shoots like six arrows at a time, and again showing his frustration with trying to kill a man. That should be really easy. I mean, his last few attempts are just sad. I mean, he just tries to stab him and stuff. Anyway. That scene is hilarious.
Yeah, that dream sequence is very whimsical.
Yes.
It was like something from one of the Monty Python movies.
It was like something from Baron von Munchausen.
Oh,
it was,
right.
Yeah.
Also starring Eric Idle.
Yes.
Your favorite actor as a child.
And
Terry Gilliam directed, another alum.
Yeah.
I wonder if they approached Terry Gilliam to direct this movie.
He said no. He's like,
He's like, fuck no, I gotta not make Man of La Mancha.
I think he would have been working on 12 Monkeys at this time.
So guys,
what could have been?
Wow.
Brad Pitt could have played the Eric Idle role in this movie.
Jesus.
So did you guys think of any, like, alternate titles for this movie?
I think, Puma Prowl.
Ooh. Yeah, there are lots of pumas in this movie. Or talk of pumas.
Yeah, I actually think Splitting Hairs is not a bad title for this movie.
Yeah, true.
It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a really stupid play on words for a really stupid movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a good title would be The Servant Murders.
Yeah.
Towards the end, like the cook who works at the stately house, who is also Rick Moranis' actual mother.
Yes.
She just gets killed by John Cleese by being frozen in a freezer.
For no reason.
And then the nanny gets blown up.
By the way,
this isn't really mentioned after it happens. It's just these wacky deaths.
And I don't know if this was planned or anything, but the nanny, the same nanny that explodes and has her, you know, burnt hat on her coffin.
Yep.
In the flashback scenes when they're showing how the babies got switched in the 60s, because, you know, wild and crazy
times.
Is she
also the nanny in that?
She is the nanny in that. She's the nanny who loses the baby the first time. And when Eric Idle is, hanging out with the crew, because that's his new crew.
His running crew.
It's strange. Everybody's, like, at a party. They're outside, and the baby's down on, like, below some steps. The nanny's got the baby down there. The nanny just walks off. Eric Idle takes the baby and just leaves again. This nanny is the worst fucking nanny ever.
She does not even check.
The second child she almost lost.
Doesn't realize, because usually you would know by weight if you push something, if it's like not,
no,
if it's
John
losing, if it's lost
the baby
8 pounds.
With a bomb.
Of course.
Yeah.
A baby-shaped bomb shaped like a skeet disc.
It's like a Cabbage Patch doll, you think? Yeah. You think it was just like
this filled with C4.
So these disturbing murders take place towards the end of the movie and are never solved, as far as I can tell.
No, they just give up.
Yeah, because like some cops show up at the nanny's funeral, and for some reason they decide to talk to Eric Idle. Again, there's no reason they should be talking to him.
No.
There's no reason that they should even think he has anything to do with this murder. But for some reason they just kind of surround him, and herpes cop number one.
Yeah,
herpes cop.
But if you see the scene, big ass cold sore on this dude's lip.
Yeah, there's just a cop with herpes. That's all.
he doesn't even talk. He's just in the scene.
Like, he just had a bad.
I guess herpes is a sight gag.
He just had a bad Tinder hookup. life has not been the same since.
So, do you have an alternate title?
I did. It's not very good. It was Killing Him Softly.
Yes. With his songs.
With his songs.
Eric Idle was killing everybody softly.
Eric Idle would want to make such a negative reference to his own songs. This is a man who has won a Tony Award, I think.
No, I think we've all come to the same conclusion. We all have the same favorite moment.
Oh,
which we have not mentioned at all.
Yes, yes.
Wait, we didn't mention Eric Idle's testicles yet?
No. That was Daryl's favorite moment, obviously. Could stop talking about it. Could not wait.
Could not wait to talk about it.
And now I can't stop.
I mean, I'm just saying, this movie could have also won like any kind of porn award because...
An AVN. It could totally could have swept into the 1993 AVNs.
Best crossover.
Best crossover.
Cross platform.
The last like third of the movie is in France. Like John Cleese tampers with Rick Moranis' car, which is an MG apparently.
Yes, yes.
Really cool looking car.
Sweet MG.
Beautiful. Apparently he tampers with it so that it's going to blow up or something. And
it's not in France though. They're not in France anymore.
Yeah, it was weird. Like there were all these French people in the movie. So Rick Moranis was in his car, stuck behind a bunch of French people who were in a car acting really, really French.
Yeah,
and
super
French. Eric Idle then
peasant clothes, everything. There's like. Garlic cloves hanging from the roof of the car.
And there are two bicycles on the top of the car because they're on a bicycling holiday. And there's this car chase, and the French people with the bicycles car gets driven into this construction site. It goes up a ramp.
It flips. Well, it goes off of... There's
a
dump
ramp.
Truck.
Yeah.
There's like a dirt pile and then the dump truck, and then it goes off of those, and then it jumps off the dirt.
An amazing stunt.
Onto some, like, there are some pipes that are
there. And then it hits something, and basically it flips over. And instead of just crashing and burning like a normal car would,
it lands squarely onto the bicycles
that
are mounted.
The four bicycle wheels mounted on the roof.
The bicycles were mounted upside down, so it lands on the wheels and just keeps going.
Yeah, you got an upside down car rolling on bicycle wheels for hours.
And this is
for
hilarious
for like days.
Yeah. And then there's some bikers that pass, and even they understand in the movie how hilarious that is.
Yeah.
And they're laughing so hard that they run into each other.
That's the kind of ridiculous humor.
Yes, that was really good.
The whole movie had that like theme of like humor. Yeah. Would have been pretty good.
Yeah, it would have been a good Laurel and Hardy movie.
Yeah.
And the special effects were actually like for that is really cool that they were able to
blow
do that.
Up that car, which is. It's actually very sad. I was sad to see that car.
I don't think they blew up an actual MG. I think those were just random parts.
No, they were just parts that were laid around.
All I saw was pieces of the chassis.
Yeah, because the tires weren't even connected. They were just like leaning up against it.
It didn't really explode. It looked like it just melted.
It was just on fire.
Yeah, so the current Duke, Rick Moranis, his car does blow up. Eric Idle feels very guilty about this because he couldn't stop John Cleese from doing it. And then John Cleese shows up at the house and decides to shoot everybody because he's become the guardian of the infant Duke. But then, after like 1 minute of us believing Rick Moranis is dead, Rick Moranis shows up and saves the day. and they all live together happily.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Barbara Hershey drops a Puma statue Puma. On Don Cleese's head, yeah. which should kill him, because, I mean, it's up from, like, 30 feet in the air.
Yeah.
But he's fine.
And it breaks in half over his head.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, like, full on. It's either, if it's not stone, it's plaster, and even that's heavy enough to kill somebody.
Oh, yeah. I mean, broken neck for sure. But
so that was a pretty good sequence. But we each have a least favorite sequence.
Least favorite sequence.
Oh, yeah. Some worst moments.
You have to do that, too.
I really think just overall the pacing was the worst part of this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say the pacing or the editing.
Yeah, any time that it was just slow.
These slow sequences that should be faster, and it's missing some of the things that are supposed to make the jokes.
Like, this movie was 84 minutes long and felt like it was over 2 hours long.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
It did. There was times when I felt like it was over an hour and 40 minutes long,
I guess. Yeah.
But I
think I really didn't like the Barbara Hershey seduction scenes, because it's just kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, and it got old quick. Like, we were like, okay,
she's going to try to, like,
she's a hussy whore.
She's Mae West or whatever. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's all she does.
And it's just so unrealistic, because, I mean, she just looks like so much younger than Eric Idle.
Yeah.
She's only 5 years younger than her son, but she looks a lot younger than her son.
Yeah, she looks like she's almost 20 years younger than her son. And I mean, you know, she's dressed up like she's dressed up like the Duchess, and she does look really good. I mean, her outfit's definitely
dressed
played
well.
Up. Oh my God.
Yeah, to the T.
Just beautiful, but I mean, it just, anytime you see them, like, you know, this grab ass, it's just so
it's not
awkward.
Good. It's really,
no, it's gross.
Eric Idle's not like a good looking man.
No.
He's not a good looking young man at all.
And it's also, he's not like hideous enough to make it look super funny either.
It's not funny it's not funny that she's like chasing after this guy, obviously, for
It's not like he's like Danny DeVito or something. Like,
yeah, we're just kinda goofy. It's
no, just
like,
a goofy guy.
Yeah, so this for me, this movie, because it had a lot of pacing problems. But did deliver some laughs, like genuine, like funny moments.
And they delivered two laughs.
For me, on our spectator spectrum, it landed in between Running Out of Luck and The Quest. The Quest being at the bottom, putting Splitting Arrows just above The Quest, and then Running Out of Luck above that. Yeah. Which makes me kind of sad, because it seems like everything I'm recommending is not recommendable.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually going to jump on that train as well and put my previous least favorite was The Quest, the other Lindsay movie. Yeah. This one has now superseded it as the worst movie.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And it is now at the bottom of my list. I'm sorry, Lindsay.
It's okay.
I'm very sorry.
You know what? Like I said, the last time I only remembered like three things from this movie.
And those three things were pretty good.
They were.
That's why we do this.
Yeah. And here's the other thing.
Rediscovering your childhood and how delusional you were as a child. Yeah.
How bad my childhood was, and
well,
I thought this was a good movie.
All the naked ladies, so that's pretty great.
If this was the movie you remembered, because you have nothing but naked ladies and Rick Moranis.
Sounded like a great movie. Yeah.
I'm also not a huge fan of British comedy either, so it already had like a two strikes against it going in.
I'm going to put it second to bottom.
Oh.
I liked it better than Frozen Assets, I think. Just because Frozen Assets has a couple characters.
Now you're just talking nonsense.
Now you're just being a jerk.
And the main character of Frozen Assets is Corbin, well, aside from Shelley Long, is Corbin Burnson. He is a total jerk in the movie. I didn't like seeing him on screen.
Larry Miller on screen?
Well, he was good, but like none of the characters in this movie are total jerks, so there was less bad moments for me where I hated everything I was watching.
Wow.
That is kind of true. Because the characters are all so middle of the road, there's not like any, I mean, the most morally ambiguous character is John Cleese, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. He's hilariously, like, insane.
I mean, he tells you his plan was to blow up a baby in a carriage.
Yeah.
You just laugh at it, because it's John Cleese.
He's like, I didn't mean to blow up the nanny.
I was trying to kill the
nanny. That was a mistake.
Innocent bystander.
You know, you make mistakes in this thing, anyway.
Yeah.
Where do you have it, Daryl?
I think for me, it is going to go, my list is, first is Hollow Point, then Final Mission, then Frozen Assets, then Running Out of Luck. But I have an asterisk next to Running Out of Luck, because Running Out of Luck is not a movie.
Yeah.
It is a Mick Jagger vehicle. So it is at the bottom because it is not a movie. If it was a movie, it would be at the top because it's hilarious.
It's a jukebox musical consisting of songs entirely from one album that nobody wants to hear.
I like to think of it as an experience.
Yeah, it's like the
Mick something
Jagger
that you just
experience.
You just experience.
That's what
Mick
wants you to think. It's supposedly his fantasies. Yeah. No, it's a bunch of cliched scenarios. Anyway.
Yes. But I think I would put it just below Frozen Assets, which would make it the bottom, technically, because Running Out of Luck is at the top of whatever it is.
Yeah. It's at the bottom of the movies, but the top of just it's media.
It's the top of media.
Your favorite music video.
Yeah.
It is my favorite and the longest music video ever.
Eat your heart out, Thriller.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it's not. I'm not saying it was terrible, because I was kind of on the fence, too. I wasn't sure how I wanted to put it above Frozen Assets. I just think I liked Larry Miller enough that he redeemed enough of Frozen Assets for me to put this lower than it. But overall, I do kind of agree. The characters were much more... Corbin Burnson is so abrasive and...
Yeah.
If you want a movie that's not terrible, there are no real jerks, minus the man who tried to blow up a baby. He's actually not a jerk.
Yeah.
He's just crazy. He was like the Larry Miller character. There should have been more of him.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, we have a recurring theme with our movies. There's a Donald Sutherland, a Larry Miller, and now we have a John Cleese.
Yeah. Wild card, bitches.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. There's always a wild card.
Goddamn wild card.
And usually the wild cards are the best ones.
Yeah.
Actually, in Running Out of Luck, I think the wild card is Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger is everything.
It's a movie about a wild card.
Everyone except Radon Chong is the wild card in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we go, there's a couple of notes I want to make. This is the first movie we've seen that actually has a Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh,
nice.
Guess what it is?
I'm going to guess totally fresh at 89%.
17.
9.
8.
Oh,
hey,
snap.
Hey, that was pretty cool.
One good rating out of 12. The good rating is by somebody named Clint Morris from Movie Hole, which said, and the pull quote is, Catherine Zeta-Jones is as hot as she is hilarious.
Wow.
So I think we know where this reviewer is coming
from. Didn't Roger Ebert give this 2 thumbs up?
He gave it 2 stars out of 4.
Oh, okay.
Okay, not quite.
Not quite 2 thumbs
That's
up.
That's still terrible, though. He should
this
not
is
be
not a very good review
high.
By Roger Ebert. I mean, he basically makes the point that Eric Idle and Rick Moranis should be playing each other's characters.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have improved the movie.
No.
It wouldn't.
I don't want to see Eric Idle acting like a super confident jerk.
I also don't want to see Rick Moranis' boss.
Don't you?
Speak for yourself, Daryl.
You know what?
And
I rescind that.
And speaking of that, I have a copy of the 1996 Bear Facts video guide here. Where to find your favorite actors and actresses nude on videotape. And this is the only citation for Eric Idle being nude in a movie.
Surprise.
You guys surprised he wasn't nude in Nuns on the Run? I sort of thought he was, but no.
This is probably a good thing, that this is the only movie he's been nude in.
Yeah, that's probably for the best.
Yeah, so it cites him for buns. It doesn't mention any front nudity.
Well, I mean, it's not, you don't see it from
back
the front.
Sack.
You see it from, it's
under. It's back sack.
Back sack.
Okay. Back sack.
It is.
Like
it's through the thighs,
basket.
Like in the back, yeah.
Yeah. So Jeremy Irons nude a bunch of times, Eric Idle only once.
Mm. Well, you know.
Yeah, so.
You get to see Catherine Zeta-Jones naked, and that's kind of. Well,
do you?
I mean,
I don't remember.
You see her through the window when she's getting out of the swimming pool.
It's
not frontal.
Anything, but, you know,
no, it's her. You see her butt. And
but
stuff.
I mean, you know, Catherine Zeta-Jones always looks exactly the same.
Pretty
she's
much.
Always, she's the perennial Catherine Zeta-Jones.
23-year-old CZJ looks a lot like 43-year-old CZJ.
Yeah, just not as cancerous apparently.
And she is not. And she does not have an entry in the Bear Facts video guide, as far as I can tell. They were not aware of her, even though they were aware of this movie and she's naked in it. Whatever.
They probably just figured she wasn't going to amount to anything.
So for the next 3 episodes, we will be continuing this Forgotten Favorites.
Oh, really?
And hopefully it will get better. I think what I've done here is...
set
is
the bar.
Create a new paradigm for entertainment.
What I've done here is that the previous movie that we watched had put us up like in such a high. Like there was no way to match the movie that we watched previously, which was... Russian Terminator.
Correct.
Yes.
There's
yes.
no way to just even equal that.
No.
So what I've done is I've brought us back down to baseline.
Correct.
And probably the best way possible. Yeah. I've just made our expectations just back at nothing.
Yeah. If it's better than Splitting Hairs.
Then there you go.
There you go.
Then you got it.
All right.
So awesome. Yeah, that's
Bechdel test? What about the Bechdel test?
It doesn't pass.
I don't think so.
I don't think two females ever talk to each
other.
They do.
Barbara Hershey talks to Catherine Zeta-Jones, but it's all about you're going to marry my son for his money. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Cat fight.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. Yeah,
by the way, there's another joke that, again, because so many jokes are just kind of lost in the shuffle of just stuff. Because Eric Idle was born in the 60s, you know. His name is actually Tommy Butterfly Rainbow Peace.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, he is Duke Tommy Butterfly Rainbow Peace.
Yeah. And the mom calls him Rainbow Peace for short.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, yep. Who wants to say butterfly?
Yeah, after she does her volte-face from trying to seduce him to saying, "Oh, I missed you, my little baby boy." Yeah.
Which also sounds oddly seductive.
Yeah she slaps him.
Oh, you've been such a bad boy running away from your mother.
I'm sure Barbara Hershey wants to forget this entire performance.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Barbara. We'll
her performance as the mother of Natalie Portman, born 40 years later than Eric Idle was, is much better.
It's already forgotten, Barbara. Mm-hmm.
And it's a failure.
Yep.
But a favorite.
So, unless there's an accident.
What?
An accident. Accidents happen, don't they? You know, car crashes, shooting accidents, people falling out of windows, or drinking mercuric chloride in brandy, which not only conceals the taste, but also makes subsequent chemical detection practically impossible. That sort of thing, you know, accidents.